Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It is the 19th of December. Good morning, and very nice to have you with us today. Joining us for the discussion, let me introduce everybody, and then I'll tell you how you can be a part of the conversation, because I know you want to be. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Yo!
And, yo, and WAMC newsman Ray Graff joins us.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Raymond. Welcome back. Hope you're feeling better.
Feel great.
Excellent. Thanks. I know. You look, you have the strength of 10 men.
Indeed.
Yes. And WAMC news director Ian Pickus joins us as well. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, guys.
It's the WAMC crew this morning, and we welcome you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, or go to WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable. Now you'll see morning panel 12, 19, 14.
Yeah.
And then you click on that, and then you can comment. That's the way that works.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray, for your continued
affirmation.
Interest. Yes, yeah. Your affirmation and your continued interest.
That's
in
why I'm here.
I appreciate it. Let's get on to the news of the day and what's happening in this world of ours. Continued reaction over Cuba. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. We didn't talk a lot about the subject. One of the article in the New York Times this morning, brave move lifts Obama's standings with Latin American leaders who have consistently lambasted the United States, and President Obama abruptly changed course, praising the policy shift on Cuba. So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, I think it's a brilliant move. I think there's a comparison between what Andrew Cuomo did with fracking and what Obama has done with Cuba. And that is, the parallelism there is that they have both seen their progressive wing come forward. And you know what? I think that this is a pretty good example of the way in which it works. They worry about elections. They worry about elections. In the case of Obama, he's lame duck, and he's decided to go for it, and he's looking real good.
What do you think brought this on? I mean, ultimately there was a hostage exchange, and this brought on diplomatic discussions that really have changed the course of history. And it's fascinating that it happened without really any of us knowing the sausage making process.
Remember, Joe, first of all, we know that these negotiations have been going on for a couple of years now, apparently. You'll remember when the wall came down. Remember, nobody knew it. Nobody had a feeling of it. Certainly, we weren't advised of it by our billion-dollar, industry that is supposed to be looking in on all of that stuff. It just makes sense, and it happens. I think, Joe, we were getting to that point. I think people were beginning to. Everybody we know wants to go to Cuba. You know, has gone through Canada, gone through Mexico. When it was opened up, Roselle went through Kennedy. I think there is a sense that while the Cubans have real problems in terms of some of the ways in which their government has acted, and believe me, they do, that they're not unique in that, and we really needed to come to a point where we were all sort of talking to each other, because that would make things go faster. And also the fact that the Castros are done. You know, one's gone, and the other one says he's only going to be there for 2 years, two more years.
So let us talk about Marco Rubio at this point. So you have as the New York Times puts it, a visibly angry Senator Marco Rubio emerged as the face of the hardline Republican opposition to President Obama's new outreach to Cuba. He swept political calculations aside. He said, "I don't care if the polls say that 99% of people believe we should normalize relations in Cuba," said Mr. Rubio, who grew up in Miami and is the son of Cuban immigrants. "Within the coming months, Mr. Rubio, a likely presidential candidate, will find out on just which side of the polls in history he stands. On Thursday, he got his first brush with an opposing view when Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky and a likely 2016 contender, endorsed Mr. Obama's move to normalize relations with Cuba as probably a good idea." Rubio has become the leading voice of criticism, denouncing the president's announcement of the restoration. What do you think? What do you make of the argument first? Let's go there before we talk about the politics.
Well, it's almost religious in nature. I mean, Rubio is a guy who feels passionately about this. He was raised in that environment. The Castros were cursed. He grew up every day hearing it, and he says it's not political. But of course it's political. It's always political. He is counting the people who this is a really salient issue with, figuring that they're going to be with him when he needs them, and that he can't desert that group, and that they will come through for him. You know, we look at the electorate and we say, okay, we poll them and we see, okay, this is vastly popular. But we know that in many cases only a percentage go out to the polls. And I think that may be what Rubio is counting on here.
And from what I've been reading, I mean, certainly there is something of a generation gap in terms of how Americans with ties to Cuba are looking at this. And it's hard to know. I mean, just from my own interest in this story, reading the pieces the last couple of days, we don't always know what things mean as they're happening. And, you know, Rubio has staked himself out here in a way that a lot of people have drawn attention to for really the first time, touting his foreign policy credentials and having a disagreement with many other in his party and the White House today. It's tough to know in the long term how this really will resonate with the larger voting populace. And you get the sense, just from an outsider's point of view, that Rubio doesn't mind if ultimately, you know, the popular view of this goes in the other direction from where he is, because he has such a personal stake in it.
Well, I think that's right. It's the personal stake. And I know that our engineering department, as wonderful it is, has Ian's mic open. I'm sure of it. I'm just positive of it.
Oh, it's open.
It's open.
Maybe it shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's open.
Now it sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So the thing that I find interesting, obviously there's a personal stake in it. Ted Cruz yesterday sided with Rubio. Jeb Bush yesterday sided with Rubio and the criticism of the president on this.
And Menendez, who's a Democrat,
right,
said, you know,
but a Cuban Democrat.
But he said the president's changes were, quote, clearly intended to circumvent the intent and spirit of U.S. law and the U.S. Congress.
But here's what I look for in a political leader. Chris Christie said, I have no comment.
Right.
no comment for Chris Christie, as he's with the president, I believe.
Or Cowboys owner. I mean, one or the other.
Well, right. Well, look, Obama is going to be very popular because of this. Most of the country feels strongly. The big issue has always been, electoral issue has always been Florida. The Cuban folks who hate the Castros have always been seen as the key to a presidential election. It always comes down to Florida. We saw with the hanging chads and everything else. It just shows how close things are. So here's a president who doesn't have to run again, and he's doing what he has to do. It'll be very interesting to see what Hillary has to say about all of this.
I think the fact of just parsing a bit of what Rubio said in his in his editorial in the Wall Street Journal, as well as his press conference that he convened yesterday, saying that the policy is a victory for oppression. What is the side of that argument, that by opening up a country and by restoring relations, that is a victory for oppression?
Well, there are an awful lot of Latin American leaders who don't believe that. This is the kind of Cold War rhetoric we've seen before. You know, Joe Ryan checked in and said, I completely understand why Senator Rubio would be upset. Allen says it's political, but that doesn't mean he doesn't really feel that this is wrong. He's Cuban and, of course, going to be upset. I understand why Cubans might be angry, but we can't base our foreign policy on one small group of people who are upset. This is the right decision, says Ryan.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more letters. We welcome yours. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment online for all of us to see at WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll come back right after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new, 845-901-6129. And Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more, saratogabridges.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Ian Pickus, and we welcome you to join in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we go to letters. We got a couple of them, a few of them, many of them.
We do. We do. From Jim. I support the president on Cuba. We should also at some point restore Cuban sovereignty over Guantanamo, just as we did with the Panama Canal Zone. In one stroke, we end a remnant of colonialism and help resolve the Guantanamo detainees problem. And that's from Jim. And then I'm using a different device here, Joe, today. So have mercy. And then we hear from Irene. Tourism will no doubt lead to more jobs in Cuba and Florida. JFK had insight. Obama was able to deliver. Obama must continue to help the USA progress. Best lame duck president in history. And then Ozone Pete says, hi, folks. If Rubio thinks he can float his political career on the backs of these dispossessed 80-year-old Cubanos, I'll advise him to think again. Jeb, too. Secondly, if we think normalizing relations with Cubans will make them all American consumer units, we might want to talk to an average Cuban who has been steeped in a lifetime of sharing and solidarity with his fellow Cubans. Thanks for the discussion. And that's Pete from Toland. And let's see here. William says, careful with language. Joe said that normalization with Cuba involved a hostage exchange. That could be interpreted as saying we gave them back hostages. They released a political prisoner, and we returned convicted criminals. At least that is my recollection. Maybe I'm wrong, he said.
I think that's an interesting point, because I know that the headline in the Times was U.S. to normalize relations with Cuba after hostage release, but the author of the letter is correct in the sense that it is what's the man's name? Alan Gross.
Make a very good point.
Was a prisoner. And was being held since 2009, and was released. I don't know when you use the word hostage. It seems.
Yeah, we had spies. No surprise there, really.
No.
No, I'm with you, Joe. I think you could interpret this as hostages. They're holding our guy. We're holding their guy. All of a sudden, we do a trade. That's it.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Were there any more letters, or were we?
Well, no, Irene wrote a second one, and we generally don't read second letters. What else will the president do next? ? Police budgets, congressional cronyism, Amtrak, NPR, bridges, roads, all, in capital letters, need to be dealt with.
all need to be dealt with. Right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Ian made the point, Alan, about this being obviously something that is going to play out. You know, we're trying to say, you know, what's going to happen. Although the travel ban is being lifted, a lot of this is moving very swiftly within just the next few weeks, maybe a month or more, but not much more, that this could be normalized. And we're going to see this play out. And of course, the question is, what does it mean for another administration down the line? And do you think this is short term or long term? I mean, once you go down this road after so many years, it's the old toothpaste
back into the tube.
Thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good point. My sense of it is that the Menendez remark is very important and almost pregnant. Remember what he said there, that the president is going ahead without his circumvention of congressional approval. Does anybody else on the panel think that there may be a little bit of a stink there, in that that's the kind of thing, if they try to impeach him, that's going to be the thing that they use? So I think Menendez, who is a Democrat, of course, chose his words very carefully. I think it was a threat to Obama.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will return. We have a lot of other things to discuss, including what's going on with the Secret Service. It's been a subject we've talked a lot about. We welcome your comments on that as well. Not to mention the issues we've already discussed and a lot more. Roundtable at WAMC.org, WAMC.org/roundtable. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Ian Pickus are the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. We'll be back after this short break. Oh, hello. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Ray Graff, Ian Pickus, Alan Chartok, they are all here, and we will we welcome your letters, your input, WAMC.org/roundtable. Go to the website. It'll say 12/19/14 panel.
That's the date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
12/19/14. Took a little trip.
Hike.
Down the mighty slope. Right. Whatever. So you do that, and then we read your comments, or you can write to us just directly, roundtable@wamc.org. And before we move on to other issues, we do have a lot of letters on Cuba.
Well, a few more anyway, Joe. I know Tom, Tom checks in. Cuba will end up being as bad as when it was run by Batista, just better suits. Well, it wasn't only run by Batista. It was run by the mob and the mafia. We all know it. If America makes the same kind of mistakes of putting some kind of a thug in charge of the government, then, you know, we're going to be setting ourselves up all over again. I think that's a very good point on Tom's part. And Denise says, just remember, Obama won the Cuban vote in Florida, parentheses, by a small margin in the last election. Quote, the times, they are a changing. And Ryan says that it seems to me, regardless of the background or adversary, completely closing down channels of discourse is an immature approach to foreign relations. Good move on America's part. And Rich says something. Where will the New York State open government report on the police go? Andrew Cuomo was flying high. Will he investigate the matter and make changes as the report requests? And that's from Rich. And that has to do, Joe, which we all know, in that there's a government committee which is charged with looking into these things and saying we should open up the files on police. That's what we got.
That is what we have. So let us go to other issues and talk about what else is happening in the world. And as soon as I can bring this up, there we go. I want to talk about the Secret Service the report that was released. The Secret Service has stretched to and in many cases beyond its limits and needs to hire 85 agents, 200 uniformed officers to sufficiently perform its mission, according to a report released yesterday by the Department of Homeland Security. The report also said that the fence surrounding the White House must be changed as soon as possible and made at least 4 feet taller. The horizontal bars on it, which make it much easier to surmount, should be replaced with vertical ones. The agency is, quote, starved for strong leaders, and its next director must be an outsider who would be removed from organizational traditions and personal relationships and will be able to do the honest top-to-bottom assessment this will require. That's a fairly damning report, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes,
it is. And I'm scared to death about our president. I really am. You know, all it would take is we've seen, you know, I have no faith in the report on the Kennedy assassination. I always think it was much more than we know. But I have no faith that they would let a Jack Ruby standing there as they pulled the president out, as they pulled Oswald out of there. But I got to say, I am scared to death. All it would take is one really crazed person. And if we're not really on the top of our game, we're asking for it. It would be awful.
We don't have a great track record. I mean, we've had 44 presidents. You know, more than one assassination of a president should be enough, I would think, to say, let's have an overhaul of the Secret Service if there's one needed. The fact that, and I know you guys have talked about this on the panel a lot, the fact that a guy got into the White House in 2014 and the amount of cover-up that went into us eventually finding out the whole truth is shocking. It's shocking. You know, the Kennedy thing was 1963. We should be 50 years better at protecting the president than we apparently are.
Well, not to mention
and fence building. I mean, come on, really? You need a report to say we need a better fence.
You know, the thing about the fence, and I understand that. Yeah. But you were just there too, Ian, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
July.
You know,
did you climb over the fence?
No.
I haven't climbed a fence in my life.
but you go there and you see it and you think you could do it. You know, you could. It's like one of those things of looking into the subway. You know, you could jump around on the tracks, run across and jump up, but you don't want to because you're pretty sure you're going to get killed. And and the same thing you would think with the fence. I understand your point, Ray. I agree with you that by putting it up by 4 feet certainly makes sense.
Yeah.
Vertical rather than horizontal also
take the ladders
makes sense.
Down too, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Come on.
Remove the escalator. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's more than that. When you have the guys who are on duty in the hotel or the place the president's going to stay pulling prostitutes into their room, you're asking for them, of course, to be set up in a blackmail situation, something else. We've just got to be better than that.
Yeah. I mean, you at least have to check the prostitute's clearance before.
have the at least go through the security
a background
suite.
Check. That's what they call it.
Is that what they're calling it now? Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't trying to see if there were any weak points when I was visiting the White House back in July, but it didn't seem like there were any. I mean, I wasn't going to try anything, but they're pretty well herded in terms of tourists. And, you know, I went through multiple metal detectors. Every 5 feet, there seemed to be a police officer, especially out on the fence, on the gate. I didn't get the sense that it was vulnerable. Now, obviously, it was. And I guess that just goes to mindset, too. If you want to jump over that fence, you might be able to find a way. But the fact that that level of security is not good enough is really stunning.
Well, and again, Ian, you're absolutely right. We've talked about this a lot on the panel, but it's, you know, you can understand one. Okay, he gets over the fence.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, that happens. And then, how did he get over the fence? Well, the guy seemed to be texting. He was playing words with friends, whatever that case may be. All right, so he gets over on the fence. But then to be able to then get in, the door is unlocked. You get past the first guard. You get past the second guard. You get past the third. And that's really when you say, oh, okay. And I'm interested, Alan, in the fact that they come up with a very specific number of 85. We need 85 officers, and we need 200 uniformed officers. That's a very specific number. It's not like
I'm sure they've gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's not like, you know, you're just saying we need increases. It's very specific.
Well, I think that they do that for a reason. They want people to have a sense that the report is, you know, honest and is specific and that they've done their homework. But I'm sure, Joe and Ray and Ian, I'm sure that they've gone around, and the way consultants do reports, I certainly had my share of doing that at the Eagleton Institute of Politics when I first started. You know, you'd go in and you would ask everybody, you would talk to everybody, and you would say, how many more people? And they would give you a number. My job was staffing state legislatures. You know, we were going down to Wisconsin and to other places, and you would talk to everybody. People would come up with a number. You'd say, that sounds good. Into it it goes.
Well, and we obviously there's been a great deal of looking at this issue, and you can only hope that the things will be bolstered. It is shocking that in a post 9/11 world, that there are still lapses, not only in our homeland security, but also in in the protection of the President of the United States.
You know, Janice makes a point. She's just called and said, after how many billions have been spent on the homeland security infrastructure complex, we still need more dollars for the Secret Service. There should be enough there already, and that's from Janice. Now, that's an interesting point that she makes if you think about it, because there are two ways to run this Secret Service thing. One of them is to make sure there are enough people and not falling all over each other. But the second point is that there has to be, and that's why it's so important to have a structure which works, a military-like reporting system in which everybody is doing their job, not playing word games on a computer standing there, not, you know, falling down like Keystone Cops, but in fact doing what they're supposed to be doing. I think her point is well taken.
We have other letters as well on this.
Oh, yes. We have one from Robert. Thanks for pointing that out, Joe. Lack of fence security is scary. That a well-dressed but uninvited couple was able to get into a White House party is terrifying. Was anybody fired for that one? I don't think so.
Yeah, I thought someone. I thought a head did roll for that, but I'm not positive. I'd have to check it on it.
Okay,
I'd have to Google
and then
it.
Someone would have to Google Salahi for the first time in 4 years.
And Margaret says, Alan, panel, it was not the lone gunman in the JFK and other assassinations in America. Be real. It was a huge plan by big business and government officials. The Secret Service have to be alert. The JFK assassination needs focus by all Americans. Europe, Asia cannot believe that we do not fight for the truth. And Peter says, folks, heard the tall part is only in the front and the remaining is much shorter. Really? Seriously? Apparently not. And that's from our usual correspondent, Bonnie, who always has something good to say.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, helping to bring nature closer with Eagle Optics, Vortex, Swarovski, and Zeiss binoculars and spotting scopes, 518-226-0071. And Luminary Publishing, publishers of Chronogram and Chronogram.com, a website focusing on life in the Hudson Valley, including local event listings, community pages, and more, Chronogram.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. It is 9:45 on a Friday morning, and we welcome you to our program. Feels good, doesn't it, Alan?
Oh, good. Feels very good.
Feels good.
What part of this feels good?
Well, I just said it's Friday, minutes. And he went,
oh, 14 minutes
oh, is
ago?
That what that is that what felt good? All right.
No. We're having a great time. Oh. We really are. It's a very important show, and I we're talking about very important things, really. Jeremy checks in and said, I think we might be missing the point on Secret Service and assassinations and assassination attempts, says Jeremy. When the international moneylenders want a president dead or threatened, the Secret Service is manipulated to allow for it. Lincoln, McKinley, JFK, Reagan, Obama et al., a little investigative research into this issue reveals all this and more.
There has been a lot of investigative research on these assassinations. A lot.
Indeed there has. Indeed there has.
Indeed you know, somebody would only write a book about it.
Yeah.
Robert says, the lack of fence security is scary. That a well-dressed but uninvited couple, we did that one.
Yes, yeah. We did.
Deja vu.
We did that one. Very good. Deja vu all over again. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. I think that's it. Is that it, Joe?
Did you that's what I see. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about marijuana.
Okay.
Two states in the heartland of this country are suing. Filed the first major court challenges to marijuana legalization on Thursday, saying that Colorado's growing array of state-regulated recreational marijuana shops with piping marijuana into neighboring states and should be shut down. The lawsuit was brought by attorneys general in Nebraska and Oklahoma, and asked the United States Supreme Court to strike down key parts of a 2012 voter-approved measure that legalized marijuana in Colorado for adult use and created a new system of stores, taxes, and regulations surrounding retail marijuana. Mm-hmm. It seems, I think we talked about this at the very beginning when both, was it Washington and Colorado, signed on to this, that what was the effect going to be for neighboring states, and now they've decided to go to the courts, even bringing in the Supreme Court on this. And I don't know exactly what to make of this other than I can see the point, right, Alan? I mean, you have a substance, you have a state that has the infrastructure to deal with it, or at least we're assuming they do because they've passed the measure, but then you have neighboring states that are dealing with the consequences that do not have that because they didn't vote it into law.
Well, yeah, that's their tough. I mean, the beauty of the American system is that the states are the laboratory of democracy. We allow the states as much power as we can give them. Of course, when it comes to the feds, ever since the beginning, when it comes to court cases, the feds versus the states, for the most part, the feds win. And, you know, from the very beginning, there was a question whether states would be allowed to set themselves up to do this. Now, there are many people who think that marijuana is appropriate. It's an okay recreational drug. Frankly, I don't happen to be one of them because I listen to the experts who say that it's a gateway drug. But for whatever reason, Colorado has decided to do it. And these other guys are either just jealous, which is certainly a possibility that they're getting it, or, you know, just stuck in the old way. I think the way that this is going to go is we're going to see what happens in Colorado. Does it really corrupt the society? Are there, you know, drug heads walking and roaming the streets, committing crimes? Or is it? And once we see that, I think the courts are going to have some guidance in what they do.
But I think this is clearly a situation which will define a certain portion of states' rights. This lawsuit, which was brought by the Nebraska Attorney General and Oklahoma Attorney General, accuses Colorado, and I'm quoting here, I think it's from the New York Times, of participating in a scheme that cultivates packages and distributes marijuana in direct violation of controlled substances laws while ignoring every objective embodied in the federal drug control regulation. Seems to me you either have a federal drug law or the federal drug law really doesn't mean anything, and then you have states' rights. So this is destined for the Supreme Court, for sure.
Well, that's right. And that's why I said, as I culminated my long-winded remarks, that it is going to be a question as to what's sensible. Quite frankly, the Supreme Court follows those indications. If things are out of hand, one guesses that the Supreme Court will find a reason for saying, no, this is a federal law. If it turns out that Colorado, you know, knew what it was doing, I think you might find a difference. Now, there will be the jurisprudence guys who teach at the law schools who like to get on me about this kind of stuff, who will say, absolutely not, the law is the law. I say baloney.
I'm surprised that a neighboring state has not sued the federal government, saying, how dare you turn a blind eye to on-the-books federal prohibitions against marijuana?
Mm. Mm. Well, yes. True. That's a good point.
We welcome...
That's a good point that they would do that, yeah.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's move on to
Joe, yesterday, there was an Amber Alert. Remember that? Ray's in the newsroom. It was called off this morning, and Sam wants to know, is there an update on the abduction and murder in Bern? The internet seems really confused about the home invasion. Is there anything up there?
Yeah, Jessica Blaustein Marshall had the latest at 9 o'clock, and I don't have the copy in front of me, but the sheriff was quoted on a radio station this morning saying that the story that the caretaker told is false. And we will, of course, have an update for you at 10:04.
You mean that there might not have been guys in black suits and black masks?
That is apparently what is being discussed, and we'll have the latest for you coming up in less than 12 minutes or so.
Yeah. Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple says authorities have a person of interest in the death of Kenneth White, a 5-year-old who was initially reported as kidnapped from his Bern home and later found dead near the trailer where he lived. Someone was being questioned Friday morning, said the sheriff, who discounted the story. Authorities were initially told that the boy was abducted Thursday by two men wearing ski masks. As Ray mentioned, you spoke on a AM radio station here in Albany, saying that it's a horrific act, and we hope to have more details in the next few hours. So we'll have more on that throughout the morning.
Terrible story.
Is there anything worse than the murder of a young child? I don't think there is.
No. It's really sad, horrific stuff. I do want to real quick go over the talk a little bit more if about Sony. That story, which continues to, I think I mentioned this yesterday, and I know Ray, you talked a lot about this. Over the past week,
yeah.
But there's so many facets to the story that it's fascinating. Well, now George Clooney has got involved.
Oh, jeez! Now we're all set.
He blasted North Korea in a new interview, criticizing the country, and but also blames Hollywood for their take in this.
For caving in?
And the Sony hack attack, as it's being called, unfortunately, by the tabloid press. And saying that entertainment figures failed to sign a petition that he circulated in support of Sony. In a interview, Clooney said that he's worried the situation could cause a chilling effect with studios wary of taking on controversial projects.
Do you think?
Yeah, and he said, we cannot be told that we can't see something by Kim Jong-un, of all blanking people, is what he said. Clooney said in the interview, and he said that he and his agent sent a petition of support to industry executives, but no one would sign the petition.
I mean, that's Hollywood. This is now a national security matter. If, in fact, it is true, and I don't think there's been absolute confirmation that the finger is pointed by our government at North Korea, but if that happens, that goes out of the realm of what it says in Variety magazine and becomes a national security issue, because you have another government, if it's true that it was another government, basically threatening 9/11 style attacks on our homeland. Then that requires some sort of response, and the president talking today, 1:30, isn't it?
1:30, yep.
And that'll be one of the topics he touches on, I believe.
We expect him to, although it's certainly a long list that he can touch on today.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you know,
we're carrying this, Ian.
We are carrying it live on WAMC.
Good thing you didn't see Team America. That's all I can tell you.
Well, which is being shown in its place in many places.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And being canceled in its place, too.
Yeah, some of the...
A truly hilarious movie, if you like.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think about it for a second, the consequences. Let's just say, posit, that a bunch of people go into a movie theater and it's blown up. Who would be picked on as the aggressor? The people who were doing the terrible thing that we're talking about, or the movie theater for not being responsible and not playing it? Now, we say right now, isn't this terrible, and all the rest. But if you're sitting there and making these decisions, you got to be thinking across the board, don't you?
I mean, I'm glad it's not my decision to make, but also, you know, it's a comedy movie.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone's going to blow up a movie theater because they don't like the kind of movie that's being shown, yeah, I think, you know, caving to that is not a great precedent.
Finally, in other entertainment news, Stephen Colbert said goodbye to the Colbert Report last night after 9 years, 1,447 episodes. He ended with a final edition. There was a sing-along at the end, which, did you see it, Ray?
I did not. Oh. I was full of NyQuil.
I actually stayed up to watch it last night. It was really incredible. Did you see it, Ian?
It's DVR'd, but I haven't seen it yet.
I'm
really unprepared.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. But John Stewart and Patrick Stewart and Big Bird and Vince Gilligan and Doris Kearns Goodwin and just this very eclectic Michael Stipe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, just very eclectic group of people who were there to sing "We'll Meet Again," and and also, of course, for those of you who may not be aware, here was a guy who was basically playing a character of a satire of a long-winded conservative host, but never broke character during the finale. Never mentioned that he was going anywhere. Never mentioned that he'll be taking over for David Letterman in May. And it was really fascinating to just see sort of this. An understanding that, yes, he was going off the air, he was going over to bigger and better things, and yet, you know.
Right. Stephen Colbert is leaving.
Come out of that. Right.
And Stephen Colbert is taking the new show.
Right.
Two different people.
Yes.
But don't you love endings of these shows? My favorite of all times is Newhart. I'll never forget it as long as I live. Great.
Yeah.
Remember when he wakes up in the bed?
It's a dream. It's all a dream.
It turns out it's a dream, but he's the first character, not the second character. That's what's so great about
it. It was from the Newhart, the Bob Newhart show. Because was the way that goes is there was the Bob Newhart show in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then there was the Newhart show in the 80s. And then in the 90s, there was a show called Bob. And then when that bombed, he went to and did George and Leo.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know. I never was around for the last two.
That was Judd Hirsch. Yeah.
And rumor is Bob Newhart will be taking over for Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
The circle is complete.
Was it Larry Wilmore, right?
Larry Wilmore.
Yeah.
And I think that show is going to be very good.
Called the Nightly Show.
The Nightly Show,
Raymond, Alan, Ian, thank you very much for being with us this morning. We'll be back on Monday, and have a great weekend, and keep your cards and letters coming. Roundtable at WAMC.
Keep reaching for the stars.
That's right. Roundtable at WAMC.org. The roundtable continues after this short break.